RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a very special Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and
Beans. Listen, before we get into what we just did, let's talk a little bit about a very special event that's going on this evening, Frank. What is it again?
What?
Your show?
Oh, my show. Yes. Yes, it's I'm sorry. I was totally lost. Yes, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I invite you all for a very special belated birthday event tonight at 7 o'clock on the Quite Frankly YouTube channel or D Live or, you know, the Quite Frankly .TV or Periscope, whatever.
That was 7 o'clock. Great.
Yeah.
7 o'clock. Make sure tonight of all the nights in the world, you are there to watch it.
Yeah, got my parents coming in. I know it's 2 weeks after my actual birthday, but we had a lot of technical difficulties, and it's just going to be good to have them in. I didn't even see my father on Easter, so he's been afraid to come out of the house. So I'm very happy that he's going to be chilling with us tonight. So it's going to be like, you know, catching up and good thing, all good things and special, quite frankly, announcements and. I think it's going to be a memorable night.
I think so, too. And speaking of being afraid to come out of your house, Frank, we just had the best interview with Eustace Conway from the Mountain Men show on History Channel.
So good.
He is just, I just love the man. Like, talk about freedom, inherent freedom. It's something else. So we're going to cut to that interview now. It's about, I don't know, half hour long or so, a little longer. And then we're going to jump back at the end, talk about some other stuff. But please stay tuned right now for our interview with Eustace Conway. So we're here today on this Friday edition, joined by someone really amazing. I probably never thought that I'd ever get the opportunity to talk to in person. So we're here with Eustace Conway from popular show on the History Channel. By the way, Eustace, I posted on my Twitter account, who knows this guy? And everybody loves you. So you're from Mountain Men. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're in an interesting situation right now because you are literally probably like the quote freest person I've ever met in my life. Explain to some folks who might not be lucky enough to have watched the show what it is your life is like.
Thank you for that opportunity, Tracy. Basically, people that know the show might know me as the Mountain Man Eustace Conway, representing North Carolina. And the whole show is based on like people that have a freedom way of life. And so they found me and realized that that's what I am and what I do. And the show is just more of a recent thing. I've only been doing it for 9 years, but I've been living outside freely since I was young. Like the day I turned 17, I just walked out in the woods and started hunting and gathering and making my own stuff. And to me, that's really sort of a foundation of freedom, is not having to depend on anybody for food or medicine or any needs. Like basically, I just drink the water from the spring. I hunt the food off the land. I grow the food. I save the seeds. I eat the wild plants, you know, so, and like I haven't used toilet paper in decades, like 30 years. So I hear about this big toilet paper scarcity. And I was like, oh, well.
What do you use if you don't use toilet paper? What are you using? Leaves?
Well, the beauty is I have an education to allow me to use a wide variety of stuff. A fern is one of the nice things, but it has to be in season. Like fall is colored toilet paper, you know, like we have colored leaves, and spring is some of the nice tenderest toilet paper, nice soft wipes. And then like wintertime, sometimes that catches you with a ball of snow, you know, so it's just a wide variety. And I realized, honestly, it's kind of a weird story. I don't know how well it translates, but I had like true freedom when I would just squat down to use the bathroom and then this is outside in the wilderness where I live, and not even think or worry about what I was going to wipe with. And then about the time I need it, then start looking around. And I did that one time years ago, and I thought, wow, like I'm not even worried about it until it's time. And I realized I have the freedom to find something within reach, you know, like I can discover something within reach to use to wipe with. And so that's basically empowerment. That's freedom. I don't have to stand in line to get toilet paper. You know, I don't have to worry if there's going to be a shortage of toilet paper. I relaxedly know that I'm okay. And so I'm not dependent on the system. And so that equals freedom.
It's as something as what would some people would think is so crazy as just going to the bathroom is so liberating. I know that people get it out there. And I was always interested about this before we get into this whole shutdown and all this nonsense. What do you do? Like, do you ever get sick, or are you so like healthy or not in contact with germs at all that you don't get sick?
Well, generally I don't get sick. So I can go for years without getting sick. Sometimes I do get sick. Sometimes I, you know, have a problem. I'm down for the count for a while and I just rest it out. Usually just drink water and rest. But like sometimes I get cut open. I've had severe gashes where I have to push the meat back in and sew myself up and put honey on it. And, you know, I put salt on it before, cayenne pepper to help stimulate regrowth. And so I take care of myself, make my own thread, make my own needles, I make what I need. And again, that is power and freedom. When you start being dependent on the system and don't know how through lack of education or lack of resources, that's when you start getting controlled and manipulated. Like, and people don't have enough experience. They don't realize, sort of like you have to free your mind and the rest of you will follow, you know, like
yeah.
I've worked with children. I founded a summer camp because this was all so important to me that I started a camp for youth and adults to have an experience like this. So we take people out at Turtle Island Preserve up here in the mountains and we teach them about this way of living. So we literally have had like a 16-year-old boy that had never peed on the ground in his entire life. Like we had to coach him into it. It's like, yeah, it's okay. You just kind of pull it out and you just sort of don't pee on your feet and you can do this, you know, and had to work him through it. And then we've had plenty of people that never pooped, you know, without a throne, you know. Over the years, we realized, you know, we need to sort of celebrate this. We actually make stickers and we hand them out at the end of an event. Like they survived and made it happen that they actually used the outhouse. And then we have people that are so not free, if you will, that they hold it like for a couple of days, you know, and they go home very unhealthy, uptight, literally anal retentive, you know, and that's sort of sad. All I do is say, well, maybe next time you come, you can let it go, you know, but
no, it's crazy. They made the decision to come out there with you and they're not willing to even just like, you know, so when you talk about going outside for these people, are they literally going in the middle of like the woods or is there like a box that you put them in an outhouse or something like that?
Well, we have different situations. I like them to be able to do both. So in our base camp where we have more of a concentration of people, we have outhouses. And so that they would, and we actually give them a choice. We have squatters where you can squat down, which actually is the way your human body is designed to go. It's a lot healthier. Or we have the more traditional American throne, you know, to sit on. But the poop goes in a hole and they can smell it. It smells not all that bad, you know, but it's basically facing reality. And usually we don't really face it too much. Like literally our face doesn't lay eyes on it. You know, we flush everything away. We don't know where our resources come from. We don't know, you know, how much horrible destruction turning on a light switch is, you know, when you make electricity and strip mining of coal and nuclear waste, you know, all this. So most of our life is separating us, like normal American life separates us from the reality of where stuff comes from and where it goes. We don't understand the big trash that we create and all the resource destruction that supports our life. Like if you have toilet paper, well, you're killing trees. That's one reason I quit using toilet paper like 40 something years ago. It's like, well, and I kill trees too, but I try to make like a board and then it stays around for a long time. Toilet paper just disappears. And trees are a renewable resource, but when you got billions of people, you know, using it, we got to be concerned more about it.
You know, this is listening to Eustace talk about this is, it just makes you think. Here's a guy that is conscious about how much resources are being used, how ecosystems are being destroyed by things like toilet paper, which we went thousands of years without in the first place, and we got on just fine as a species. I mean, not that any of us who live in the suburbs or urban areas are willing to give up their toilet paper just yet. But you think about all of the way that you live, Eustace, and how some people idealize the way we should live, and the way that you both back up your views on the world are so starkly different. You just do it and you don't ask for anybody's help. There's so many other people who think it's a great idea that we should be good to Mother Earth, but on the same time, they get behind the machinery of, you know, unavoidable government force. And it's just two stark realities here. But everybody claims to want the same thing. That's why I said before when we got on the phone that regardless of how many constitutional scholars there are out there and who can cite what clause and what paragraph better than the person next to them, you're actually living what so many people are still trying to understand philosophically.
Yeah, well, for me, it's a way of life, and I wouldn't want it any other way, and I don't want it any other way, and that's one reason I'm on the phone with you today is I see the government taking more and more control, like telling me where I can go, when I could go, and that's not right. You know, America is supposed to be the home of the brave, and what are we doing? We're all scared and staying in our houses. We're told to stay in our house. Stay in your house. And that's not freedom. We're supposed to have the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. You know, that's not much of a life hiding in your house. That's the opposite of liberty. And people want to go outside. I've got friends that can't even walk on trails. You know, they can't go to the park. You know, people are getting arrested for surfing out in the ocean with the good breeze blowing. You know, like, how can you have a healthier thing in the spite of the virus? And people need that mentally, you know, like nobody wants to be a slave in a dungeon. That's bad. You know, that's a really bad thing. The government supposedly is here to help us. And supposedly these mandates are here to help us. But I think it's going about it really wrong. Like, I think this virus is a problem. But I think the way the leadership of this country is controlling us, that's a catastrophe. They're killing us. It's about health and death. Well, they're creating death of people's lives. You know, they're losing their job. They're losing their employees that they spent years training. They'll never get it back. You know, like the impact of a lot of the decisions of our leaders right now is horrific. You know, like how stupid can you get? Like when people started telling everybody to quit, I was like, well, how is that going to help? Like, what are you going to, like, how are you going to pick up the pieces?
So you know, all of that stuff's true. How did you find out there was a, like, I don't know. Do you talk to folks that don't do what you do, or how do you get news at all? Like, I know you don't get a lot of news, but how do you get news when you get it?
Yeah, just friends will tell me. I meet people once in a while. We work together. They'll come out and I'll say, hey, what's going on? They'll say, hey, did you hear about the virus? Like, what virus? You know, but, and then I hear, you know, and I learn. And so I'm real curious. You know, actually, one of my college degrees is social anthropology. You know, so I'm always curious what makes people tick and how people act and react and what the world is to them and their consciousness, you know, what life is about. And so I'm always asking questions. I try not to be too like a interviewee or anything, but or interviewer, but But, you know, I'm always taking notes mentally, you know, I like to kind of know what's going on. So I'm not watching the news. Like, I don't watch any news broadcasts.
Good.
Don't read the newspaper. Don't watch television. Like, haven't watched television in, oh gosh, like at least 40 years, you know. So I make some television, but I don't even watch the shows that I make, you know. So, so basically the news comes to me from people talking, and you know, and that's what I want to do is to hear people's story, you know, like as a human being, you know, what makes a human being? We have an opposable thumb. It makes it so we can make stuff and do stuff. We have a large brain, and we used to do a lot of thinking. I really worry about the level of thinking we do anymore, but storytelling. So we have language. So like telling stories, everybody has a story. And I like hearing people's stories, whether I agree with where they're coming from or not. You know, it just helps me get perspective on what's going on in the world. So I like to listen to people's stories, especially wise people or thoughtful people or people that can give me perspective that I've never heard of before. Like one of the guys, he was a student of mine years ago, an intern, Paul Feather. He worked with me for over a year. He and his wife went and started a farm down in Carrollton, Georgia. So I got on the phone with him the other day. So how's the farm going? Oh yeah, we're doing great, planting a bunch of stuff. And I said, what do you think about this virus? He says, well, you know, I think a lot of the deaths when somebody dies from this COVID, it's really not just COVID. It's because they're like overweight to begin with, or they have a lung thing to begin with. And a lot of that's just from the American lifestyle. We have all kind of health problems. Like, we're probably one of the most unhealthy nations in the world, which is really strange because we have the ability to have great education about anything we want to know about, you know, and health would be one of them. We have the potential for having some of the best food, you know, which is really a foundation for existence for your health. So basically, he gave me some insight. His story was, you know, most of these deaths are complicated because there's already a health problem. And it's like, oh yeah. So it's really not just person gets COVID and they die. It's person has health problem because they have a unhealthy lifestyle and they get COVID and die. And so it's not like he doesn't care about people, but he's just sort of evaluating what I hear that story. And I go, you know, Paul, I think you're right. There's a lot to that. And so I'm learning from people's stories.
You know, Tracy, and like he just brought up there, and we were talking about this too, Eustace, just in general, when you think about all the potential that we have to be to create the highest quality foods and to be the most free and to be able to make education as high quality as possible when you let the local communities take care of what kind of things that they're going to teach and really just get down to connecting with people on individual bases instead of trying to deal with everybody as one big mob. You would think that with the potential we have, we'd be shooting to the moon, but to see all the health problems and the social problems and the media sickness we have, it only really comes down to me. It's either orchestrated that way or we just have really ignorant people running the show. I usually think it's a combination of the two, but it's really interesting observation you make.
Yeah, we should have the best of the best of the best. I mean, even right down to the foundation of our country giving us in the Constitution the freedom to go forward with the pursuit of happiness, the pursuit of health. We are supposed to be able to gather and talk and share those stories and promote whatever goodness that we want, you know, and we don't really take things in our own hand. And that's one reason I wanted to talk to you guys is I see people not standing up for their rights. And so they're losing them, you know, like it's just a steady erosion. We have less and less rights because they're giving up. We give them up instead of standing up and fighting for them. I heard that some woman protested the shutdown of North Carolina the other day in Raleigh, and they very quickly arrested her and took her away. And I don't know who it is, but I salute her for caring enough to stand up in the face of that tyranny and just saying, hey, enough is enough. Like, let's not go along with this poor leadership. And so, I mean, it took a woman to do it, you know, and it takes somebody to start standing up, you know, to make it happen. Like Rosa Parks wouldn't get off the bus. You know, she said, yeah, I have a right too. And so that's, you know, somebody starts it. I heard that some man on a bus was pulled off a bus up in, I think, New York or some big northern city. And he said, you know, this isn't right. I don't have to wear a mask. And everybody has their own opinion on it. But I salute him for, you know, being willing to fight and stand up. So here's another guy on a bus just pointing out what he believed his rights were, you know. And so it's just interesting that we need to take a stand. Salute those people, you know, they made a stand and made a difference. And that's how it all starts. We have to decide what we're willing to put up with and do something about it, you know, and that's how you get freedom. You sort of have to be in charge of it and say, hey, this is not how a human being should live, certainly not in this country. And then fight for it. You know, I think that's real important.
So if someone were to come up to you and ask you, like, what is your definition of freedom as you know, as who you are today? Like, what's your definition of freedom for folks out there so they really understand what it means? Because I think that a lot of the problem that we're having is that people in this country have forgotten what actual freedom is. They tend to think in big groups instead of as individuals. And that's when you kind of sacrifice your liberty. Because if you think in big groups, then you're putting your individual liberty aside for the benefit of a collective. And that's the antithesis of freedom, in my opinion. But what does it mean to you? Like, what's your definition?
To express your own individuality. You know, everybody is different, should be different. Like, it's good to be different, but to do what you want to do.
When you know, want to do
what,
it.
What is slavery? Sometimes you can identify something by looking at the shadow around it. What's freedom? Well, what is slavery? You know, not being able to do what you want to do, not being able to go freely down the street or go from one state to another or fly to another country. You know, basically, we are supposed to be able to be free to move around. If you're a freed man in this continent, you're supposed to be able to move. You know, you're not supposed to have to hide in your house, you know, so freedom can be defined by the opposite, by the control. So the lack of control and you know, there's always a balance. You don't want to go around killing people because then you're infringing on their freedom, you know, so there's a balance. But I think right now in this country, according to how we were originally set up, which I think was a real good setup, we are losing that liberty and the pursuit of happiness. You know, it's you can't be happy when you can't leave your yard. You know, it's pretty bad.
So you, as this amazingly free person who has successfully, we're not going to get into it today, but we'll talk about it again, has successfully kind of fought the government and won. You know, you look around at Americans, how they live now before the virus, and probably think to some large degree we're enslaved already, right? And then you see this virus come in and something tells you, I got to say something about this because this is getting crazy. What is it inside of you that kind of prompted you to want to speak to people about this?
Well, basically, inherently, I care about people and I care about this country, care a lot about it. A part of it was probably as a youth back in the 60s, you know, I was a part of an indoctrination process, just like Hitler's youth. You know, I pledged allegiance to the flag and the republic for which it stood, you know, like every day. So it was a part of a feeling of community. You know, it was my country and I cared about my country. I cared about people having the freedom of the principles that it was based on, you know, and I'm not a scholar on it, but I get freedom. You
well,
know,
if like anyone gets it, too.
Yeah. So So I care about people and I want to help out. You know, like basically I am not going to be that hurt by the virus. I'm living in a really healthy place with a lot of fresh air and nobody's breathing down my neck. And I don't need to wear a mask. I haven't ever put a mask on. I've never used hand sanitizer in my life. I know about soap. I've been using more of it here on my hands lately. But you know, I can get by even if the entire world shuts down, which seems like if the government has its way, it might end up that way. You know, you don't have to be an economic scholar to realize that if you shut everything down, you're going to have some pretty severe problems. Yeah. You know, that's when I saw that start happen. I'm like, really? Like, are these idiots running this country or what? Like, how yes. stupid do you have to be? I mean, that's pretty bad, you know. And these are our leaders. These are people that we have voted to like guide us into good times.
Well, listen, the response to that, and I'd love to hear you kind of counter it, would be, but people are dying from this virus. It's killing people. We need to stop it. What do you respond to that?
Education. Like, and a lot of my thoughts are going to be the opposite of everybody else's. That's why I'm different. That's why I live out in the woods. Like, one of the first things everybody did, the government did, was shut down the schools. I'm like, what? That's your one opportunity to teach these children what a virus is, mm-hmm. what danger is, what's going on, how to wash your hands, what hand sanitizer is, how germs are passed through exhaling, you know, how you can get it. So you throw away your opportunity. So what do? You send them home and they're all playing, you know, like in the streets and passing the virus. Like one of my college friends, they sent him home and then his roommate got COVID because he was home. He wouldn't have gotten it in school. So circling back with your question, education, you know, like people need to know what it is. Fear comes from lack of knowledge. Like we could like have the primary focus on education so that people don't get sick and know how to deal with it, identify it. So basically we just sort of run to our house and ignorantly hide, you know, and so it's really, you're talking, somebody responded to you and they said, well, people are dying. So, well, people die all the time. You're going to die. There's other sicknesses like tuberculosis that have been around for a lot longer, that are killing a lot more people, and nobody says anything about it. It's just some agenda here, some reason somebody got going on this. And so, you know, you are going to die. You're going to die from a sickness. Like, I might get it and die. That'll be all right. But you can't just shut down the economy and make slaves of the people and put them in their jail cells, like their house, and tell them, just stay there until we tell you to come out. That's just ridiculous. That's not saving lives. It's not. It's like the whole principle is wrong. And I'm not saying I have all the answers. I know I don't. But the way it's being done now is not the way to do it.
You and the reason why I think this is so interesting is because you live free every single day, like freer than I think 99.9% of the people out there. No one ever tells you what to do. You know, you have to, obviously, I don't know if you have to pay taxes or whatever, so that's that. But, you know, no one's telling you. You do everything you want to do whenever you want to do it, and nothing stops you. And I, you know, coming from somebody who lives like that, looking at this and saying, okay, this, we've fallen way too far at this point. What do you recommend people do? Like, if you were talking to your friend and he was like, yo, they have me quarantined inside, I can't come out, what would you recommend that person do to assert themselves?
Look at the whole picture. Think for themselves. That's one of the biggest problems we have, is we've sort of forgotten how to think and think for ourselves. We're always trusting and depending on someone else's opinion. You know, like I not only can carve spoon with a knife and rub two sticks together and make a fire. Like I have those skills. I also have the skill to think. And that may sound overly simple, but basically, to answer your question, that person should think and see if they're, if they want to stay in their house. If they do, then stay in their house. If you want to come out, then come out and point it out to people. It's like, yeah, I don't want to come stay in my house anymore. I'm tired of this. But basically, a revolution is in order, you know, even if it's a personal revolution of start thinking and realizing that that's not the, that's not liberty or the pursuit of happiness that the country is founded on. You know, just staying in your home unaware and full riddled with fear is not the home of the brave. You know, one reason the people are feeling like brave or feeling good is because they have a government that they can count on that's got their back. This government, I don't have words to tell how much I feel like they're letting the people down. And that circles back around the earlier question, like, why do you care? Because I care about the people and I care about the country. I care about the framework that the country was set up on that it's not really operating on right now, with more of a tyranny controlling leadership with a political agenda that's sort of hidden behind the scenes of money, you know, monetary and people being bought and professional politicians and all the nastiness that's inherent in that whole paradigm that we've gotten strayed so far from the original, not just the intent, but the manifestation that people took a big risk to get. Founding fathers, you know, expected to die, and they just, because they got each other's back and pulled their resources, they survived and they pulled off a phenomenal thing, and they just set it up really well for us, and we're squandering it, you know, and we should quit that. We should think about it and say, you know, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to support the authentic, correct legislation. Like I thought that our governor in North Carolina was absolutely breaking the Constitution. And then I've looked at the North Carolina Constitution. I realized that back in 1970, I think it was, we threw some loopholes in there that allowed the governor to do all of these unconstitutional things. Like, he has the legal ability to make these choices. And so, like, legally, he can be a tyrant. What we need to do now is look at that, think about that, and say, you know, we need to change that and go through the long, slow process of legislation to eradicate that loophole so that, you know, martial law and this kind of control is not so easy to wield, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, Eustace, did you, now, I know that earlier on you were talking about how you haven't watched television in 40 years. I have to imagine that most of, and like you said, the news and the all of the, anything that's coming from the outside world, you usually get from conversation, and you are live a very independent life. Do you, but because of the because of how little I would say modern entertainment and anything else that you have in your life, are you a voracious reader? Do you read a lot? How much schooling did you have? Did you go through all of high school? Obviously, I'd have to imagine that college wasn't something that called to you. But
no, he went to college. He got an anthropology.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
He said it earlier. Okay.
Oh, I didn't. I must have missed that part. So then, I guess. So all then, right. in the absence of all the media, are you still do you read a lot in your time in the mountains?
I would like to know that. I wish I had more time to do it. I'm really busy just living and not reading. When I was young, I read like crazy. I would read a book a day.
It sounds like you do. It sounds like, that's why I bring it up. It sounds like you read a lot. I mean, your thoughts are so well formulated. I feel like I'm talking to a wise man on the mountain. You know,
it's an interesting thing. If you don't listen to the media and you don't fill your head with a lot of the overly entertained American garbage, and I'm getting my opinionated cynical side out, but basically, if you listen to the birds and you watch the sunset, and you have quiet and peace, you actually have a brain in there. You can think for yourself, and you can like exercise that just like you exercise a muscle. And so you get some stimulation and you go, huh, let me think about that. And you think about that and you think, well, what about this or what about that? And so, you know, my thoughts come from myself. And I'm not parroting what I heard on the news, you know, so I think through it. And that's just like exercising a muscle, just like running every day. You know, you get your good physique from running. Well, if you think a lot, you become a thinker. You exercise that. And I think we need to do a lot more of that. I think that the American youth and the whole system is systematically being dumbed down on purpose so that we can be more like sheep. And that's a sad thing, huh?
Yeah. So if we
wake up, people.
Thank you for saying that, because that's what we talk about all the time. And you'd be happy to know that a lot of people are, a lot more people are than were even 5 or 6 years ago. But if you had one last thing just to say to everyone out there, what would you want to leave them with?
Oh, well, I'm not much of a singer, but I'll sing a line from a song that, let's see, Stephen Stills wrote back in 1967. Hmm. It's like, stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Awesome.
Wake up. Wake awesome. Up. You got to do something. Don't go down with the ship. Start doing something.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, we have the power to do whatever it is that we want to do. And people just don't realize that very often, especially when they're scared. Like you said, like people don't realize that, you know, God grants you the rights to be free, not the country, not the government, and that you are born that way. And inherently inside of you is the ability to do what you want to do, regardless of who tells you otherwise. It's really,
don't wait and ask permission to live. Start living. Don't wait and ask permission. You don't have to ask permission. Just live, people, please.
Amen. Thank you so much for coming on. I would really like to have you back, because there's a bunch of stuff I want to talk to you about, like your horse ride, your horseback ride across the entire country. That I definitely want to talk to you about again. I don't know if you're open to coming back on in like a little bit. It's up to you.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I would be happy to. Let me give you some information. Actually, let's see. I did an interview that's really, really well put together. A woman named Elise Spiegel spent like 5 months putting it together for Ira Glass. So if you go to Ira Glass, let's see, what's the name of his show? This American Life. Yeah. And then type in Adventures of the Simple Life. They did a really, really, really well done show that you can get on the internet about me riding across the country with my brother Judson and neighbor Susan. So we just took off on horses. So that's well documented, and it's a lot of fun, some good laughs, and just some insightful stuff on that interview. So that would be a good thing. Or somebody wants to know a lot more about my philosophy, just a really well done piece was done on the TED Talk. And just type in Eustace Conway TED Talk, and that's 15 minutes of me sort of pouring out some baseline philosophy of how to look at life and go about it. So, yeah, and if you wanted anybody to get involved in like the education center that I've dedicated my whole life to, Turtle Island Preserve, just look at turtleislandpreserve.com. Like, I don't even know how to turn on a computer, but bless my friends that do. they put together a website, you know, and communicate with people so that we can, you know, like basically I've taken an active role in helping the people. I decided as a teenager to create an education center to get people more aware of life and liberty. And so I don't just talk about it. I don't just live it. I teach it too.
Well, you're amazing. I love you, and I love your spirit, and I love talking to you. And I'm going to put all that stuff in our little show notes that go beneath the show so people can take a look at them. And I definitely don't want this to be the last time I talk to you. So thank you so much for coming on today. If one person is inspired by some of the stuff you said, and I'm one person, I'm sure that there are going to be so many more who finally decide. Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. It was great. It was great to meet you.
Good to meet you, Frank. You guys come up and visit me in the mountains sometime.
How fantastic was that?
I loved it. I mean, yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, I feel bad. I must have missed the instant that he talked about his college education, because you know the guy's like a philosopher.
Yeah,
and it's so great to hear all of the simplicity, but at the same time the depth, and it was fantastic. It really, really, really was.
No, I agree. I he said he was social anthropology. That was what he got his degree in, I believe. And yeah, so it was just a great show. And, you know, you go from that and then, you know, all the stuff he said. And then you hear what happened with Governor Phil Murphy in New Jersey the other day. You want to hear it real quick?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
This is you well known. So you made that decision, and as I noted before, 15 congregants at a synagogue in New Jersey were arrested and charged for being in a synagogue together. Now, the Bill of Rights, as you well know, protects Americans' right, enshrines their right to practice their religion as they see fit and to congregate together, to assemble peacefully. By what authority did you nullify the Bill of Rights in issuing this order? How do you have the power to do that?
That's above my pay grade, Tucker. So I wasn't thinking of the Bill of Rights when we did this. First of all, we looked.
No, that's clear. That's clear.
Wasn't thinking about the Bill of Rights in this contract. God,
I wish I didn't. I wish my first inclination wasn't to laugh.
I know.
That's what I wish. Oh.
So Gigi is starting. She has a protest she's begun today in Port St. Lucie, Florida. She is doing a open Port St. Lucie protest. And, you know, yesterday we got the whole, the country's starting to open up back up again, right? And we also got my governor saying, you know, we're starting now. You know, we don't need to wait. We're going to start right now. Beaches and waterways are starting to open. Then, you know, they're actually talking about the tourism industry being back up and running no later than June, which is it's a ramp up for businesses who have been, not that they're going to stop them, but it's hard to open all that industry back up quickly all of a sudden because, you know, you've got rebooking to do and all kinds of other crap. So we're going to probably have a flood of people from elsewhere in the country coming here because we're open.
Well,
so everybody's going to be wearing their masks and doing their thing. And if they're obviously comfortable with that. So I'm like, bring it on, baby. Let's do it. You know?
Yep.
Outside of that, Frank, I am so busy. I mean, I am going to be quiet for days on end at this point because we got so much stuff yesterday.
Oh, yeah. And I can't wait for you to summarize all the things that did come out because I was watching what was going on the Telegram groups and other things there, too. The Papadopoulos stuff. And mm-hmm. Yeah, but thankfully you got Friday, Saturday and Sunday to do some real work and prepare for a brand new week. So what's going on? Like, what are the biggest liner notes?
So for everyone out there who's been waiting, we started to get this little drip, drip, drip of unclassified information. So we got those four footnotes from the Pfizer report, right? They released four of them unredacted, except for one. After that, and that was where the whole Russian disinformation narrative started to take hold, that there was Russian disinformation that informed the FBI's decisions, and everybody like that knows what the hell they're talking about is screaming, no, that's not what happened. They weren't fooled by the Russians. You know what I mean? Like Sarah Carter is even saying it now. Molly Hemingway is saying it. It's very strange. I don't like it.
Oh, well, yeah, Sarah Carter has, I forget what the hell it was. I forget what phase of this craziness that Sarah Carter had given herself over,
yeah,
to those very forgiving angles.
Yeah, it was this. It was that the Russians tricked the FBI with the Steele dossier. That's the narrative she's giving into.
Yeah,
which I always find it interesting to watch this kind of stuff unfold because, again, I tweeted the other day, look, the Russians colluded with the FBI to interfere in the 2016 election. But I was being sarcastic. I didn't literally mean that they were. And I really wish I didn't tweet that now because people didn't understand that it was sarcastic. And that's bothering me. But anyway, I digress. So we got those four footnotes and then that narrative, which is, again, being pushed by some very unlikely people. I'm very surprised at some of the folks saying this stuff. Then we got the day after that, we got all of the footnotes. In all of, well, not all of them, a number more unredacted footnotes from the IG report. There's like 40 or 50 or 60 of them. I don't remember, but I was reading through them. So what I'm doing is I'm taking the footnote, I'm putting it in a sheet, I'm comparing it to the footnote that was redacted to see what they removed, because what they removed tells a bigger story than what, you know what I'm saying? Like what they redacted tells a bigger story sometimes than the unredaction itself. Like, why did they redact that? I'll give you a hint. 9 times out of 10 is because it was completely embarrassing and for no other reason. And then we're seeing also, like, I'm taking those footnotes and then inserting them into the paragraph where they actually were to give them context. So that's another project. Then after that, last night at around, I don't know, 10 o'clock, Lindsey Graham releases the two transcripts of George Papadopoulos and the confidential human sources he was talking to. One of them was Stefan Halper. One of them was this other person who we don't know who it is per se, that is not Stefan Halper, that George Papadopoulos seemed to have been very good friends with. So they really had someone in there that he was friends with running an operation on him. He has tweeted about that guy. He seems very upset about it. He seems very upset that that guy was a double agent, in quotes. Mm. So there's that. In addition to that, we also got the declassified and unredacted, for the most part, FISA warrants. The stuff that people have been clamoring for years is now available to the public.
What, for Carter Page?
Yeah.
The one that was leaked from the SSCI?
Yes, the one that was leaked from the SSCI, but was completely redacted.
Right.
It's not completely redacted anymore. There are still some pages that are redacted, but for the most part, all four versions have been released unredacted for the most part. So what you need to do now if you're investigating this is, and it takes a lot of time, but if you want to do it, grab the original ones that were, you know, released to the public, print them out, 80-something pages, and then stack them next to each other and compare, because they screwed up, Frank. They redacted some stuff in. So when they released the new four, they unredacted some stuff in FISA warrant one that was repeated in FISA warrant three, but is redacted in FISA warrant three and not in one. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
They weren't consistent across the documents with what they were redacting in these new versions that they've released. So you can still pull more information out if you look at the four versions sitting next to one another and then also compare them to what was originally released. So that's, it's almost like compare, contrast.
Mm.
And then analyze. And so if you think that, and then you have to look at who signed which one and, you know, all the analysis. They also released the letter that the NSD wrote to the FISA court when it said that they had noticed some issues with the FISA application. That has never been released before. And somebody, I think it was Last Refuge or Conservative Treehouse, did an analysis of that. And again, pre-bar in 2018, where there was Christopher Wray and Rod Rosenstein and all those guys, they were still trying to lie about there being accurate and necessary predication for the first FISA warrant, the second FISA warrant, and even the third and the fourth FISA warrant. And as we know, Barr has come out and said, that's not the case, guys. So there is I do not understand how Christopher Wray still has a job.
I don't either. I don't either. First of all, there have been people. I've always wanted to understand Christopher Wray a lot more. Classifying all of the notes and stuff, and all of the work in the FBI, locking it all away, seeming like he's playing both sides, like he's trying to play good cop in a game of good cop, bad cop, but still it's not convincing. I don't know. I don't like the guy, and I don't really know how to read the guy either. So I'm always just looking for somebody else to lay down some analysis so we can better gauge what his role has been and how he survived this long, especially since there's been so many instances of people being given a shot and being given a very short amount of time to prove that they're worth their while. So maybe is he serving a greater purpose that we have not been revealed yet? I don't know. But in my ignorance, I know that I'm not very impressed by him.
Mm-hmm.
And
neither am I.
I don't know.
Yeah. So that's what I got to do now. Like, that's what I'm going to be doing. And I started late last night. I was up till around almost 2:30 in the morning reading. And then I realized that I was seeing double. So I'm like, okay, it's time for me to stop, because that's what happens to me when my eyes get tired. I see double. And so I'm like, okay, I need to give these eyes a rest. And then I woke up at 6 this morning and got right back into it. And then I'm like, I got to step away, because, you know, you can't burn. I don't know if you guys out there feel this way, too. I know a lot of you guys are researchers, tenacious researchers. But you can't, if you start to feel like you're burning out on the info, you need to take a step away and just take a breath, clear your palate, so to speak, and then come back in. So I have a call today. I have two conference calls for business that I need to do today. And then after that, I'm going to dive back in, spend most of the day, and then stop to watch your show. That's the plan.
Oh, I can't wait.
You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and
Beans. You guys can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Don't forget shows, Frank's show at 7.
Yes.
On TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, RadioInfluence.com, and iHeartRadio. We will see you on Monday.
Later.
This is an MJ Morning Show podcast quick fix on Radio Influence.
Tell everyone the MJ Morning Show is back. Launched the MJ Morning Show podcast back in October. We started doing them every 2 weeks, and then we moved to doing new episodes every single week. So you could do us a huge favor and let everybody you know that the MJ Morning Show is back. If you could spread the word on social media, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, phone calls, email, I mean, wherever, just let everyone know that the MJ Morning Show is back. And the best place to see all the episodes listed and to see all the platforms on which you can listen, download, subscribe, go to MJMorningShow.com.
The MJ Morning Show podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, MJMorningShow.com, and RadioInfluence.com.